Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Saturday, September 6th, 2014. This is episode 1115. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used iPhone, iPad, or other Apple product is worth at gazelle.com. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk about computers, let's say, internet, cell phones, home theater, digital photography. Those are the big five. We could throw in some other stuff if you want. Occasionally people call and ask about battery life and stuff like that. Of course, this is a big week. This was a big week for smartphones. The IFA conference in Berlin. You guys should be in Berlin now. This is the big trade show. In which it basically has become the consumer electronics show for Europe. Ironically, it's much older. It started in 1924 as a show for radio technology. Radio. I shouldn't laugh. Here we are on the radio. It's still a big thing. It's still a thing. Now it's, of course, everything with consumer electronics. But a lot of phone... It's a good... The timing for IFA is good, IFA, because it's... Here we are, early part of September. This is a good time to announce something for the fourth quarter, the big holiday buying season. This is an excellent time if you're going to announce a new iPhone, or smartphone, better than January, which is CES time. CES is planned in Las Vegas every year at the beginning of the year, not because it's aimed at consumers or the press, even though we pay a lot of attention to it, but because they want to get to dealers early in the year to say, hey, would you be interested in this for next Christmas, almost a year from now, because it's going to take us that long to make it, get it to you, for you to put it in the stores. They plan early. Smartphones, though, now we're turning them around every few months. Look at Samsung. There's a new Samsung smartphone every 5 minutes. So they need really events that are closer to the actual release date. Samsung announced, as we expected on Monday, the Galaxy Note 4. This is the newest giant phone from Samsung. I have a Galaxy Note 3 here in my hands, and even as huge as this is, it's smaller than the Galaxy Note 4. They also announced, I think Samsung showed a little lack of nerve. The way Apple works is they figure out what the best thing would be in their opinion. And that's what they release. And they say, here you go. This is it. This is the best. This is our best. Samsung, and I kind of honor this point of view, releases everything. We don't know what's good. We don't know what's bad. You want it in 4 inches, 5 inches, 6 inches. You want it. Anything you want. We'll make it and see what happens. And partly that's because they're massive. They make not just phones and TVs but they make the chips that go in all of the Apple products. They make refrigerators. I believe they make boats, like giant ships. They're a conglomerate. And so they can afford to throw a few hundred million here and there to just try it. But I believe they perhaps could have... Maybe they lost their nerve because they did two Note 4s. They did the Note 4 that is the evolutionary improvement on the Note 3. It's got, instead of a fake plastic rim that looks like metal, it's got an actual metal rim that looks like metal. So that's nice. The screen's a little bit bigger. The camera's a little bit better. But it's evolutionary. It's just like, oh, that's... So if you're it still has the S Pen. They added the ability to have Swarovski crystals on the back. Literally, one of the ways they have black, white, gold, and oh yes, bling. So that's one of the ways you can order it. But then I think they probably meant to announce the Note for Edge, that they thought that really was, because that's kind of more innovative and interesting. Same idea, same roughly exactly the same phone with one small exception. The screen goes all the way over the right edge and bends around the right edge of the phone. And in effect, that's a second screen where you can see icons can be there, date and time. I really think they showed it off this way, and I really think this is the real reason for it. You can take it to a restaurant or a meeting, put it in front of you on the, you know, like you're not, I'm not looking at my phone, but you can read this Edge screen right there. And you can see everything that's happening. You can even touch it and do stuff. And even with a case on, I'm sure that's where they came up with this. It is a little goofy. It's a little odd. But it's innovative. It's like, if you're going to release something new, release something really new. Well, they did. They released it. I don't know how you're supposed to hold it. So I'm a lefty. Probably be all right for a lefty, because you can't put your, you don't want to put your fingers on that rounded screen. You'll mess it all up. And plus, it's active. It'll do stuff. When they showed the phone at the product announcement in Berlin, everybody was walking around where they're with hands open, like in a very unnatural position. And it's because you've got the screen going all the way around the edge where you normally hold it. So it's an interest. I think it's interesting. And I think maybe that was the real Note 4, but they just lost nerve and said, you know, maybe, what if people hate this? And they have sold a lot of these. It sells quite well. Last quarter, the Note 3 sold 30 million units in 3 months. Pretty good. Not an unsuccessful phone, so they probably didn't want to mess with that. They also released a new watch that looks like you have an iPhone strapped to your wrist, let's be frank. It looks like a shrunken, it's bent, it's huge. And the pundits, the tech press are saying, well, you've got to rethink what you think of as a watch. Why shouldn't a watch look like your house arrest bracelet? Why shouldn't it be giant and look like you've got a phone bent around your, why shouldn't it? Okay, maybe athletes would like this because, I mean, they already wear sometimes really big watches as they run, you know, to measure their heart rate and stuff. You could put music on it. It doesn't have a camera, oddly enough. It has everything else. Oh, and the thing about this, it really is truly the Dick Tracy watch we've been waiting for, because you can make phone calls from it. It is your phone. You can make phone. It has 3G wireless connectivity, so you can surf the net. You can send emails. You can talk to it. You do pretty much everything you do with a small phone bent around your wrist. Interesting product from Samsung. So that was the Samsung announcement. Sony announced like 18 new watches. Everybody's doing watches. Watches and bands. Sony made the distinction. A watch is something with it that is like for notifications. The band is for health, you know, monitoring, a pedometer and a heart rate and all that. So they had one of each. New phones. They're nice. Good. They're nice. It's hard to get excited now. These are very mature products, and there's nothing, you know, they're all kind of the same, which is good for you and me, because then we could choose the carrier we want, and we have more. We have enough choice. We can, I like this. Now, if you're waiting for the iPhone, I understand. This Tuesday, 3 days from today, we will find out what Apple has up its sleeves. I think it could be a watch up its sleeves. We believe they'll announce the new wearable, whatever that is. And I think Apple's kind of telegraphed that it will be both a health monitoring device and a notification device. Those are the two things these watches primarily do. You can see your text messages. You can see, you know, weather reports. And you can see what your heart rate is and things like that. So I think that's what Apple's going to do. Plus two new iPhones, the iPhone 6. One will be a smaller version. One will be a bigger version. The smaller version still is the biggest phone ever released by Apple, 4.7 inches. That's comparable with kind of the mid-sized phones of today. And then a 5.5-inch phone, which is competes with the Galaxy Note. It's that big. That's the one I'm most interested in. I'd love to see that. Apple has apparently done deals with all the credit card companies, and this is an interesting thing. So your phone can be a payment device. Now, many of you have already been doing that. The phones that have NFC chips in them, you can tap them on a pay and go, and it will pay for you. And I think McDonald's does that. Starbucks does that. A number of people do that. But Apple has not gotten to this yet. And so that should be interesting. We'll find out Tuesday. All right, let's go to the phones. Give me a ring. 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Ba-ba-ba-da-ba. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the number. 888-827-5536. When you call that number, you will be speaking to the lovely and talented Heather Hummond, the phone ranger. Hello, H-Bomb.
Hey.
How you doing?
I noticed you can kind of do the robot there. I did not see this robot
whenever
at last
I hear
year's company party.
Yeah, well, it's Blondie. Whenever I hear them, I flash back to the 80s.
Yes.
And my robot
comes out. I got to work on my dance moves.
Who do we have here? Who should we talk to?
We need to talk to Sean in Thousand Oaks.
We do.
Got some movies to take care of.
Okay. Wow. All right. Thank you, Heather. Hello, Sean. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. What's up?
Hello?
What's up, as they say?
Hello.
Hey.
I have a question about, I've been backing up my DVD collection to hard drives for personal use and all that stuff.
Yeah.
I'm to the point now where I do it with a docking bay, and they're just raw 2-terabyte drives.
Okay.
And I'm at about 36 drives.
I'm sorry.
And then, of course, is there any way to, like, catalog them or something where I could, like, name them, say, movies 1 through 36, and then have a search where I can search for a movie title and know it's on drive 5 or drive 12.
Yeah. Lots of ways to do that. Mac or PC?
Mac.
Delicious Library. And the nice thing about Delicious Library is it will use the camera on your Mac. Now, it's a little late for most of those, but it can read the barcode on the DVD package, add it to your library.
I don't need to do that. What I'm talking about is...
I understand, but you want all that information from the DVD.
Well, I have all the information in the DVD when I handbrake it, then I flick it, and there's like three steps I do, and then it's all the metadata's on the, you know, on the movie file. I'm talking about like the DVD images that I just want, are basically...
No, I understand what you're saying. I'm just giving you something that will do a very nice job of what you want to do. The thing you want is the simplest thing, which is where does that thing live? And any database, you can make an Excel spreadsheet would do that. You just write, it's on disk 32, position 7. That's a simple thing to do. The nice thing about Delicious Library, and you're lucky you're on a Mac because it's the prettiest of all the solutions here. For those of you who don't want to hand enter or go through a lot of trouble entering the metadata, you just hold up the barcode and Delicious Library will pull down the description, the reviews, the title, everything like that, populate the database, and then you can add things like location to the database. And also, this is actually such an innovative program when it first came out. Now it's not so much because Apple basically stole the design and applied it to their iBooks. But at the time, it actually spawned a whole category of new software. People called it the delicious generation because it was, I hate to use the word, skeuomorphic. It had a wooden bookshelf with actual pictures of DVDs. And by the way, not just DVDs, all content, books and everything else on it. Looks familiar? Yeah, it should, because Apple basically lifted it for their iBooks design. I think it's a beautiful program. It was really cool when they first wrote it, the fact that it would use the camera to scan the barcode and all of that. You can try it for free. You do have to be using OS X 10.8 Mountain Lion or later. And if you like it, you probably should buy it. And they even have a Bluetooth barcode scanner that makes this even easier. So instead of using the camera, you could just use a little handheld scanner. The whole idea of all of these, and there are quite a few of these, and on Windows there's similar things if you just search up DVD library, things like that, is to do exactly what you want to do, Sean, which is keep track of where the heck these movies are. It's a category that's long been around a long time. It's called offline storage. Photographers have to deal with this because nobody can afford to have enough. That, you said what? 36 hard drives? Have 36 hard drives connected to their computer? That's not practical. So if you have a lot of content, I'm amazed you have that many. I should also mention just and somebody else said, hey, what about index cards? Yeah, that would do it also. You could just, it's, I mean, what you'd want to do is not complicated. It's just with every entry, you need to have a little note. This is where it is. This is where it lives. But almost all of these database programs acknowledge that. Everybody in the chat room says, aren't you going to talk about nude celebrities? No, I'm not. Thank you. Caleb in Newfoundland. Now, am I saying that right? Because in Canada, they say Newfoundland. What do they say in New Jersey?
It is Newfoundland.
Newfoundland. All right. Let me get it right. Welcome, Caleb. What can I do for you?
I've been doing photography since December 26th. That's actually, I was gifted a camera for Christmas.
I love it. Yes, in December 26th, 2013, I began doing photography. I love it. You know the date. Do you know the time?
I actually do. I think I have it written down on my page.
Your first photo. I love it. How's it been for you? You love it?
I do. You know, it's like it's a form of creativity that's not destructive. You know,
exactly.
I love people. You know, they see my photos, and you know, I love you know, as rare as they are. I love just like them leaving those comments. Just like, wow, it's really amazing. It's like it's something I try my best at.
You know, I love photography too. It's a wonderful hobby. Digital photography has made it very easy, and people, and I'm going to say affordable. People might say, wait a minute, these cameras are expensive. Yeah, but you're not buying film, you're not paying for processing. And one of the reasons digital photography has taken off is because you learn faster because you don't have to hold back. When I was learning photography in the film days, you knew every picture you took was going to cost you, not just for the film, but for the processing. And even if you, as I did to save money, rolled your own film and processed it in your own home darkroom, it was a deterrent. You couldn't take as many pictures as you might want. Now, I put every digital camera on burst mode and take tons of them because you never know just the right pictures. So you can develop very quickly as a photographer now in digital photography. I think it's a wonderful hobby. I noticed that of all the social media that I use, Google+, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, I spend the most time on Instagram because photos, you said an interesting thing. They're non-destructive. They're positive. They're slices of life, and they don't carry a lot of the, the cheesiness that you see in other social media. I'm never disappointed by my Instagram feed. But what can I do to help you with your new hobby? I'm sorry, did I put you to sleep, Caleb? I did kind of monologue there. I apologize.
No. Trust me. I'm a huge fan of this show. I watch, like, pretty much, I listen to almost every show that I can fit on my iPod. There's more
Thank you.
Than there is anything else.
Thank you. Well, you're used to me monologuing then.
kind of. Normally, I'm used to the hearing a absence of laughter from Jeff Jarvis.
He's kind of a grump. Hey, hang on. We have to take a break. It's the bottom of the hour. We'll come back and we'll talk more about photography. I just got a new camera I can tell you about and how it ways to store your photos and more. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Scotty Wilkinson is here. He is the home theater guru. Joins us every week to talk about big screen TVs and surround sound, Muzak, and all that jazz. He's the editor in chief at the AVS Forum, which has always been a great place for people who are real TV buffs.
And audio buffs.
He also hosts a little bit of a podcast called
The
Home Theater Geeks. I guess you're doing one this afternoon.
I am. Yeah, I'm pre-recording today because next week I'm going to be at the big Cedia show.
Oh, now you Cedia is that up for?
Well, Cedia, I'm so glad they have an acronym because it stands for Custom Electronics Design and Installation Association.
But it's an installer's show, in other words.
It's an custom installer show. It's a home electronics show, relatively high-end, generally speaking. And, you know, because it's got to be high-end if you're going to have a custom installer coming and put stuff, you know, build your theater for you, basically.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, nobody's going to do that with their 12-inch Philco.
No.
Would you install my Philco?
Yes.
No.
It's by definition, it's a little bit on the high end. This is the show where we see the next year's projectors. CES, we don't see many projectors. We see mostly flat panel TVs when it comes to displays. But at CEDIA, we see projectors. And so I'm very excited to see what will be coming down the line in terms of projectors. But one of the main stories at CEDIA this year is going to be Dolby Atmos for the home. There are going to be so many speaker manufacturers with Dolby Atmos systems and speakers and AVRs, AV receivers and preamp processors for those who can really spend some money. We're going to be seeing a lot of that. That's going to be one of the big stories at the show, I'm sure.
Atmos is distinguished from other surround sound because it has a speaker above your head.
Correct. Several speakers above your head.
See, if I'm a home theater installer, I'm figuring, how can I get a little head start in competition? I know. Will is say, hey, you know, you don't do you have the speakers over your head? Well, no. He gave me 8 speakers, but I don't have one over my head. Well, we can solve that. Does it really make a difference to have a speaker? In fact, how much stuff has that kind of encoding?
Well, there are no Blu-rays currently, but at CEDIA, we will learn of the first Blu-rays to come out with Dolby Atmos soundtracks. And there are currently over 150 movies that have been mixed in Atmos for the commercial cinema. So they've got a great library already to put onto Blu-rays, and there you go. Boom, you've got Atmos. Now, in addition to a native encoding of Atmos onto a Blu-ray, the system also includes what's called an upmixer. So it will take 2-channel or 5.1 channel or 7.1 channel existing content and expand it into the third dimension. Ooh, scary.
Surround sound is three-dimensional, I might point out.
No, that's not true. I disagree.
Wait a minute.
Surround sound.
Oh, it's a flat plane this?
It's a plane. Yes, it's a plane around your ears.
Well, I can't take it. It's got to stop. I need to hear what's above me.
Well, you know, if a helicopter flies overhead or in Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, if monkeys are scurrying around in the trees above your head, you do want to hear what's over your head. Because we evolved as humans to be able to detect the direction from which sounds are coming in a three-dimensional sound space, not just in a plane, but also in the height dimension over our heads. And this is what Dolby Atmos addresses.
Okay, whatever you say, Scott, you're the home theater guy.
Well, let me ask you this, Leo. Have you ever been to a Dolby Atmos screening, a Dolby Atmos presentation?
No, I haven't.
In a commercial cinema? Well, then you haven't heard it.
So you're saying, really, it's that great? Really?
I am a big supporter. And you know me. I'm not going to say something if I don't believe it. And I really, really find Dolby Atmos to be very effective. I really do. And I've been waiting for
when
it
you
to
putting
come
that
home.
Atmos in your home theater.
Well, as soon as I can.
Really?
Believe me. Absolutely. Okay. Oh, absolutely.
2 speakers over your head. Why not 1 speaker over your head?
Well, that is a competing system called Auro, AURO. And they put 1 speaker overhead and they call it the voice of God.
So, Scott, I'm just gonna make a prediction here.
All right.
Once they got everybody to buy speakers over their head and a whole new surround sound system,
yeah.
Then they're gonna put speakers in the floor and say, "What? You don't have Atmos 2? What about the sounds coming from below you?"
Well, now think about it. In the history of humanity over the last 100,000 years, how many sounds have come from under the ground? Earthquakes, maybe, but they've already got butt kickers for that.
I'm telling you.
You can install motion simulators in your chair and get that effect, no problem.
Two years at most. I'm telling you. Because where now, else listen. Can they put them? They got them behind us. They got them in front of us. They got them above
overhead.
Us.
Yep.
I guess they have corner sound. Can you have corner sound?
Yeah, you can. I mean, sure.
I think we need down below. Speakers down below. I'm telling
now,
listen, you.
You know, you can install.
It's like this. You know there's going to be a razor with six blades next year. You know there is. It's just automatic. Oh, you only have the five-blade razor? My goodness, how do you shave?
Yes, how can you possibly shave?
How could you survive? All right. No, I'm gonna take your word for it. You're right. I'm speaking out of ignorance. I've never been to a theater with speakers over my head.
You need to go hear that. You really do. It's very impressive.
Yeah.
There's just no question about it.
But it's only first once in a while. They're not putting something in there.
Well, it depends. That depends on the movie and the sound mixer.
And how many helicopters there are.
Well, you know, like if there's a rain scene, you get the rain coming down from overhead. There are a lot of things they can put in those overhead speakers. It depends on how the soundtrack is mixed, really. And at Cedia, I'm going to be moderating a panel on which there is going to be a re-recording mixer talking about the process of mixing in Atmos.
Mm.
I think it's a pretty big deal. Now, for those who don't want to mount speakers over their head, and this does have a fairly low wife acceptance factor, you can buy little modules and put them on your existing speakers, or buy new speakers that have up-firing drivers as well as front-firing drivers. And those up-firing drivers take the overhead signal and bounce it off the ceiling. It actually reflects off the ceiling. So as Dolby puts it, this is a much lower friction solution to getting sounds coming from overhead.
Right. Now, you'd probably want a dedicated room, home theater room for this.
You would.
You'd need to kind of control, because you'd want to sit right under them, right? That's usually where I put a light. So,
well, normally speaking, the Dolby Atmos overhead speakers are typically a little ahead of the listening position and slightly behind.
Oh, so there's one in front and one in back.
Two in front and two in back is the sort of ideal home situation.
Well, I thought you said I had to buy two new speakers. Now I have to buy four new speakers. And by the way, I got to get wire in the ceiling.
That too. That is a bit of a problem. Unless you buy these enabled speakers, which fire upward and reflect off the ceiling.
But
then
that's not really a good way to go. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, Scott Wilkinson, Home Theater Geek. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back with more of your calls right after this. In my day, we only had one speaker, and we were happy. Yeah, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK. Leo, thanks again to our musical director, Nathan Staten, who does a great job of finding great tracks for the show. Before we brought in Scott, we were talking a little bit about photography with Caleb in Newfoundland, New Jersey. Is that named after Newfoundland, Canada?
I have absolutely no clue. All I know is that there's trees everywhere. It's green, it's green, it's green.
I love it. That sounds beautiful. Yeah. So, all right, so you were talking about how you've picked up digital photography. You're enjoying it. What can I do to help you?
Or you just wanted
to say hi?
Well, I mean, of course, that's something I'll do. But hello,
you do have a blog. I see your blog, justmephotography.wordpress.com.
My main is my Facebook page, which F and Dunn, aka Jason, was so kind to put an IR.
Oh yeah, Jason knows you. Yeah, that's great. He says you're a good guy.
Yeah, so we've been. I made a post on my tech blog about texting and driving, because that's something that really just makes me just want to start flipping tables.
Oh, I know, and I see people doing that all the time. It's really scary.
I know,
scary.
You want to scream at you, like, you dumb moron, you're going to kill someone. Put the phone away.
Yeah. But what can I do for you? You have a question?
I do. You know, this was not a cleverly planned advertising pitch, I assure you.
Okay.
So, I mean, of course, I know, you know, you're probably an avid photographer yourself, are you not?
Mm-hmm.
So you'd be able, you know, to kind of to judge probably maybe a little bit better than myself, kind of where I am in terms of experience by looking at my photos. But I've gotten a couple sponsorships, you know, just little things here and there.
You mean for your blog?
For my photography page.
Oh, that's awesome. Congratulations.
Yeah, they are. I use, like, my software is just, it's all the MacFun software, which is amazing stuff.
So they got to see, they're smart. They got a little plug on the radio show, too. Do you have a question? I'm going to have to move along, Caleb.
I do. What, right now I have the Sony A37. It's that was the first one. I actually have it here with me. What would be the, I'm getting struck by IRC there. What would be probably, what would be next in terms of equipment, would you say?
Well, first of all, remember that it is the photographer, not the camera. And so I think there are two kinds of photographers. There's people who are artists who really are focusing on their images. And then there are people like me who are gadget hounds and use photography as just an excuse to spend money on new gadgets. And you have to decide which you are. I should warn you, the gadget hound is an expensive route and does not make your photography better. You focusing on the gear will not help your photography. Focusing on composition, thinking about your shots. I'm looking at your shots. They look great. You have a very nice camera. I think Sony's Alpha line is actually a great line to go with because Sony has decided, and I think they're sort of achieving their goal to become the next, you know, there's Canon and Nikon and everybody else pretty much in the film photography world. Leica is in there for the really high-end camera buffs. Sony said, we want to be up there. We want to be number two. I even like that. They're not saying we want to beat them. We want to be, instead of Canon and Nikon, Canon and Sony, or Nikon and Sony, we want to be up there. And I think they've done it. And they started with the Alpha line. I gave my son an Alpha, a Sony NEX6 for his high school graduation. He's taken some beautiful pictures. I was a big Canon shooter. I've started moving over to the Sony. Because, first of all, Sony makes the sensors for most of these cameras anyway. They make the best sensors out there. They also they acquired Zeiss, and they're making some very nice lenses. I think because you've got a Sony body, you should continue to buy Sony lenses. Now, the one thing that is a little different here is that your camera is, the sensor is what we call an APS-C size. That is a nice size. And you're getting great images. I'm looking at your blog. But the next step up, the so-called full-frame sensors are noticeably better. Once you start shooting full-frame, you will notice a difference. And the lenses you're getting are what we call cropped lenses, designed for the smaller sensor. So you might want to decide, do I want to invest more in glass, the lenses, for these cropped sensors? Or am I going to move, and I think you will if you get serious about your photography, to a full-frame sensor, in which case you might want to start moving to the full frame sooner than later. Now, Sony, unfortunately, has a very limited line of full frame lenses. Right now, there's only three for the Sony A7 series. So, it's a little tricky. The idea, in other words, I'm trying to say is, when one of the reasons that Canon and Nikon are so dominant is you pick the kind of camera system you're going to go with, and you buy those lenses, and you're stuck. Because the investment in lenses is far higher than the investment in bodies. But if you picked well, that company will continue to improve on their bodies. Both Sony and Canon and Nikon all do that. And those lenses will continue to operate well with those bodies. I would say the next step up for you, and it's not right now, and I don't want you to even focus on it. I want you to focus on things like composition, thinking about what you're taking pictures of and so forth. But the next step up for you would be a full-frame system from Canon, Nikon, or Sony. And I love Canon and Nikon. These Sony mirrorless are really pretty nice. It's kind of the direction I'm going in. So think about your photography, but don't worry so much about the gadgets involved. Let's go to our next caller, Kathy, in Santa Cruz, California. Hi, Kathy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Pretty good. I just wanted to tell you that I watch you almost every weekend, and you look fine without makeup.
We were talking right before the show began. My new makeup arrived, but I used to wear it when I was in TV. It's good. That thing I like about radio, makeup not really important.
I know, really. Well, I'm going to try to make this explanation as short as possible, but I have a Dell Windows laptop, Windows 7, and I use Internet 11, which I know you don't like. But last week, against my better judgment, I downloaded an update from Adobe Reader because I got sick of it coming up on my thing every time I turned the computer on.
Why was that against your better judgment?
I don't know, because it seems like I've heard you say Adobe Reader.
Well, if you're going to have Adobe Reader in your system, you darn well better keep it up to date.
Okay. Well, then,
because that's the reason I don't like Adobe Reader, not because it's bad, but because it's had notoriously severe bugs that can let bad guys into your system. Anything that launches when you visit a website, Reader's one of them. You go to a website with a PDF, and the default is Reader launches and shows the PDF, right?
Yeah.
Anything that launches when you go to a website has to be kept up to date. Flash, Reader, Java, because bad guys, they don't attack Windows so much anymore because people keep Windows up to date. So what they're going to attack is your browser and any applications you use within your browser, because that's when they're coming into your system, right? From the outside world. Microsoft Word, why attack it? You're not browsing the web with it.
No.
But Adobe Reader has been a real target. So do keep it up to date.
Well, what happened is I have AT&T email, and some strange things started happening.
All right, hang on a second, because we're going to have to take a break. But we will come back to you right after news at the top of the hour. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time for computers, the internet. We'll talk about digital photography and home theater. Anything on your mind that has a chip in it, I'd love to talk with you about. 8888-ASK-LEO is the number. The website is techguylabs.com. Really, that's all you need to remember. Techguylabs.com. A link to the website, to the phone number is there. A link to the chat room is there. And, of course, answers to everything. All the questions, all the answers, bit by bit, plus audio and video after the fact, and we've got every show up there. So you can go back in time and see, you know, what we were talking about a few years ago. This is we're in our 10th year doing this show. Wow. Since 2004. And actually, I'm more like my 20th year doing a call-in tech show. But the tech guy began in 2004. We were talking before the break to Kathy in Santa Cruz. I got it wrong. Hi, Kathy.
Hi.
So you say you updated your Adobe Reader.
Right.
And now your mail is all screwed up.
Okay. It's the only program I'm having trouble with, and it's my AT&T mail. When I open an email, if I use the scroll bar to go up and down, I get a message that Internet Explorer has stopped working and Windows is checking for a solution. If I use the up and down arrows, that doesn't happen. So I put up with that for about a week, and I got tired of it, so I called AT&T.
Oh, they're not going to help you. It's Yahoo Mail, for one thing.
What?
They're telling you go call Yahoo, and they're not going to help you anyway.
Well, no, what they did is, and I regret this, because he reset the browser. And I asked him before he did it, am I going to lose stuff? And, oh, no, no. Well, I lost everything. Toolbars, command bar. I have to go.
Did it fix the problem?
No. And then
that's, by the way, what I would have said to do, reset the browser, because sometimes the browser has, you know, you have all these toolbars installed and stuff, and that can cause problems.
Oh,
ironically, it didn't. IE is terrible. This is why I tell you not to use it, by the way.
Well, so is there any way to go back before I did this thing and with the Adobe? Or,
well, that's what resetting the browser theoretically did. I don't know if it's related to the Adobe. I think that could just be a coincidence.
Just a coincidence?
Yeah. You absolutely have to update Adobe Reader. You don't have any choice. If you're going to use it, you have to update it. It's not safe.
Well, I always use a Flash, but I just...
Yeah, it's just like Flash. Anything that launches... In fact, I always turn off automatic PDF browsing, because that's one of the problems as well.
Oh.
So if you don't, you know, you can use it safely if you don't automatically load it, but just download any PDFs you want to see from and make sure they're from a safe place.
Yeah. Well, I have to go in and undo all my ActiveX things that I'd already fixed.
Oh, you have ActiveX going in there, huh?
Everything. And, you know, I have to redo everything since he reset the browser. But
okay, this is, by the way, this is such a security nightmare. Even Microsoft doesn't use ActiveX much anymore.
In fact, really?
I think they're going to stop. Yeah, because ActiveX, here, talk about a crazy idea. ActiveX lets a website download, install, and run a program on your computer without asking you.
Oh.
Does that sound dangerous at all?
Just a little.
Because, I mean, even if it's a good website, if they've been compromised and somebody's got something on there, which is what the most common, by the way, infection is, you're giving them permission to run software on your system automatically.
How can I find out if I do have... I ran Windows Defender. They didn't come up with anything. I have an antivirus, of course.
Yeah, I think you're all right, but I just... I would hate... So you need ActiveX for something particularly...
Well, some of my... In fact, your website, for example, you know, I can't get into it without taking ActiveX off. And
boy, that's not... we don't use any ActiveX.
Hmm.
I know you like IE, and you can't get rid of IE. By the way,
I know
it's part of Windows. But is there some reason you're not willing to go to chrome.google.com and download Google Chrome?
No, not really. I just haven't done it.
Try it. You won't have this problem with Yahoo, for one thing.
I know. So is there any way other than taking it into a shop? That
well, I don't know exactly. The problem is I don't know why it's happening.
Yeah.
The AT&T guy did the right thing, which is to reset the browser.
Yeah.
It sounds like something's running in the browser that you don't want to run, but I don't know. I can't tell because I'm not looking at it.
I know. That's okay. Well,
you can try starting IE in safe mode.
What do you mean safe mode?
Well, safe mode says don't run anything. Don't run any add-ons at all when you're running it. And that would, if it works then you know that there's some add-on.
How do I get to there? How do I do that?
Are you ready to get something to write?
I'm ready. I'm writing.
Sometimes there, in fact, usually I think there is a menu item. If you look in your IE menu, you know, in your start menu under IE that says safe mode. But if it's not there, you can run explore.exe. That's IE. Internet Explorer is, iExplore.exe. And using the switch dash, I'm sorry to do this to you, dash extoff. You're saying don't run extensions off. If I were sitting at your computer, that's the first thing I'd do. And I'd say, let's see if this works without it. If it does, then it means that there is something loading with Internet Explorer that is causing this problem.
Okay.
And now we can kind of work our way through the various things. Resetting it really just clears history, clears the cache. Your toolbars disappeared?
Everything disappeared. I had to reset, you know, everything. I took all afternoon resetting the command bars and all the toolbars.
Where are all these toolbars coming from? You're installing toolbars, aren't you?
Yeah.
Do you have the Ask toolbar on there and the Alexa toolbar on there?
No, I just have the file, edit, view, you know.
That's the menu, but that should still be there.
Oh, okay. Well, it wasn't. I had to redo it.
That's just hidden.
And then the command one and just, you know, different things that I was used to.
Yeah.
But anyway. Okay, well, I'll try this and see what happens. It's the only the AT&T email that I'm having trouble with. The rest of them I haven't had any problems with at all, any other programs. I have several other emails. I'm not having that trouble either.
Yeah.
So anyway, okay, well, I just was wondering if I had a virus or something or
it could be you have what we call a browser hijacker object, a BHO. Those are like toolbars, but they take over the browser. When you search, is your search normal? You don't get any?
Yeah, everything else is normal.
Okay. All right.
So
I would probably try it in Chrome and see if that works, because what that does is a couple of things. First of all, it doesn't use any of those toolbars or add-ons.
Okay.
And if you can surf in Chrome and do everything you like to do, for instance, you can visit our site in Chrome without any add-ons. You shouldn't need anything.
Yeah, I had Chrome on my XP, and, you know, It's okay, but so how do I?
I think people use Internet Explorer because it comes with Windows. I understand that. Well, we so call that the tyranny of the default.
How do I safely download Chrome now again?
Just go to chrome.google.com.
Google.com. Okay.
And it's a very straightforward thing.
Okay.
Try that. That's one way to figure out if there's something larger wrong with your computer. I don't think you'll have any trouble with your email. And then there's some, you know, you can do this safe mode. We'll put in the show notes a link to an article that tells you how to do the safe mode for Internet Explorer. So you can start it without any extensions. If that works, then you know, yes, some extension. The problem is, for instance, if you go, and I don't recommend it, but if you go to downloads.com, CNET's software downloader site, and that's where a lot of shareware and freeware lives. I don't ever recommend using it, but people do, because if you Google a program that you want to use, even when I mention, downloads.com will come up right at the top there. If you go there, what they'll have you do is not download just the program you want, but a special downloader that installs a bunch of useless toolbars and adware on your system. And most people just, hey, it's CNET. They're owned by CBS Interactive. What could possibly go wrong? Well, they're junking up your system, and those things can cause all sorts of problems. Those are browser hijacker objects, but the difference is you're agreeing to that. Java does it from Oracle. A lot of things do that, and you don't want those. You really don't. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, resetting IE was the right thing. If you, they're reminding me that you can go into the view and there's a toolbars item, and you can see all the toolbars that have been turned off. You can turn them back on, but just because they don't show doesn't mean they're not loading. Everybody ought to know about Gazelle.com, especially now. This is like the week. I bet you Gazelle is busier in the first week of September than any other time in the year, because this is the week when people are starting to look at the new phones, the new Galaxy Notes, the new HTC phones, the new Windows phones, the new iPhones come out next week. What are you going to do with the old phone? Well, it's cash in your pocket if you go to Gazelle.com. Gazelle will buy your old phone. And because they know that there's going to be a little bit of a time between the announcement of the iPhone and the release of it, it might take you even a little bit more to get into the store, get it, transfer your data. So while normally they let you lock in any price for 30 days, for the iPhone, you got till October 10th. You got extra time, which is great. That's why I love Gazelle. The deal is you can go now and get a quote on any of your gadgets. And it's not just iPhones. They buy all kinds of cell phones from Apple, BlackBerry, HTC, LG, Motorola, Nokia, and Samsung. They'll buy iPads and other tablets too. Amazon Fires, Asus, Google, the Nexus tablets. If you've got an old Surface, they'll buy that. So you can buy the new Microsoft Surface. Samsung tablets too. Old iPods, Apple computers, and other Apple products. Go to Gazelle, get a quote, lock it in for 30 days. You don't have to sell it right away. In fact, I would suggest you go through your gadget drawer, get rid of everything. Get that price now. And when you decide you want to sell it, you click the checkout box, and they will send you a prepaid, all postage paid box to put your stuff in. You pile it in, you send it to them, they turn it around fast. They'll even buy broken iPhones and iPads, by the way. And if you can't get the data off because it's broken or you just forget, don't worry, their data specialist will wipe your data clean. And then they'll send you a check, or if you're in a hurry, you can get a PayPal credit, or if you spend a lot of time on Amazon, this is the pro tip here, get an Amazon gift card, because they'll bump the price of that up by 5%, so you get even more. The fast turnaround, they wipe your data. Offers are good for 30 days, which gives you plenty of time to get that new device and transfer your data over it. It's no surprise Gazelle has paid out $170 million to over a million customers. Free shipping, fast processing, the best price for your old electronics. It's at Gazelle, G-A-Z-E-L-L-E, gazelle.com. Sell your gadgets the fast and easy way at Gazelle. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. I'm going to try very hard not to say, you see, you shouldn't buy Windows. Oh, I said it. next computer, Kathy, might think about something besides Windows. It's not you, by the way. It's Windows. It's not you. I'm not saying you shouldn't have, you know, you're not, this is why we can't have nice things. I'm not saying that. It's just for most people, they don't need Windows. Windows is way more complex than you need. There are so many better choices out there for what most people do. For instance, you use a browser to look at your email. I bet you mostly you do web surfing and browsing. A Chromebook would be so much better for you. No security issues, no weird nightmares. And if things like this happen, they have this feature. I love this, called Power Wash. You run it. It brings the computer back. You don't have to put any disks in. There's no disk drive. It just brings the computer back to the way it was. It's automatically kept up to date. You don't have to even think about that. And since most of your data is stored in the cloud anyway on a Google Chromebook, there's nothing to back up. It's just, good, we're back. We're operating. Everything's good. You have, unfortunately, it's like you have a 747, and all you really need is, you know, a kite. And then people say, but the kite, you can't do barrel roll. But you don't need to. So don't, I guess my point would be, unless you know you need the complexity of Windows, you should stay away from it. The problem is, for years, it's been just the default, the automatic, buy a Windows machine. Everybody should just buy a, we all need Windows. Everybody should use Windows. No, that shouldn't be the default anymore. There are better choices out there. There's tablets, which for many people are all you need. They're great. A tablet is, for most people, exactly what they need. If you want a little bit more, like a full keyboard, maybe a Chromebook. A Mac isn't a bad choice, but again, it's not quite a 747. It's more like a, you know, a 727. It's still very complex. And a lot of those buttons on that console, you don't need. So let's not overbuy. And because complexity just means more security issues, there's more you have to know, it's easier for it to go wrong. It's a Rube Goldberg machine at this point. There's a reference only people my age will get. Scott, Boulder, Colorado, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Scott.
Hi, Leo.
Welcome.
Hi. Hey, I've got a kind of a two-part question. I need of a new laptop for when I travel. And I just heard your spiel against Windows, but I do need to use Windows.
Yeah, if there are people know they need to use it, that's fine. I'm not saying that.
Right. So I need a new laptop, and I wanted a recommendation for that. And what I need the laptop for is when I travel, I need to remotely connect to my home office computer.
Okay. And that's, yeah, of course you do. And do you have a VPN set up at your home office?
VPN. What I use, and I'm not sure what that is, what I use to connect, I used to use LogMeIn until they started charging.
Yeah.
Now I use Makogo, but that is really slow. So that was the second part of my question.
Yeah.
How would you recommend connecting?
Those solutions like LogMeIn, Go to My PC are secure because they use HTTPS. So it's a secure browser interface. And a business will typically use an open a VPN solution, a virtual private network solution. The idea being you need it to be secure so that people can't observe what you're doing, but also that people can't break into the office network. You really, really don't want that. So let's first talk about the machine. Light important to you?
Not necessarily, no. And I kind of want something that's 17 inches because I have to, when I'm using it, I have at least a 17-inch monitor because when I'm using it, I have a lot of stuff going on.
But oh, well. Okay, we've narrowed it down quite a bit. I mean, 17 inches means it's going to be 6 or 7 pounds. It's going to have terrible battery life. You know, you get a desktop replacement.
Kind of.
Yeah.
Kind of, yeah. That's kind of where it is. Because I have my home office computer, I have two monitors there, so it's
You like the real estate.
Yeah, I do.
I'd encourage you to try a 15-inch screen because, boy, you can just get them down to an ultrabook size, and they're light and they're easy. They have much better battery life. You know, you're going to get 3 or 4 hours on a 17-inch. But if you really, again, this is all, you know, when I say don't buy Windows or don't buy 17 inches, these are more generalized recommendations. If you say, nope, it's got to be 17 inches because XYZ, I'm not gonna say don't. I'll tell you the brands I like. Dell makes a nice 17-inch. Lenovo is probably the king of this of the piece desk. Let's see, business laptop is absolutely the best business laptops out there. I'm pretty sure they make a 17-inch. I'll have to check and see. Yeah, they do. The Y70 Touch. It's boy, that's a massive computer. We reviewed this, as I remember now, on our review show, Before You Buy. And it's nice. It's expensive. It's well-made. It's got high power. It's got light-up keys, which are great. Lenovo's famous for their good keyboards. So I would highly recommend the Y70 Touch. It's 17 inches. I doubt you're going to get more than 3 or 4 hours on it, but that's just because you're driving so many pixels.
Right. And battery life isn't super important because a lot of times I'll be in a hotel I can plug it in. So
you can get it with a mechanical drive. If you want better speed, I'd get a solid state drive. You're going to get less capacity, but lots more speed. They give you both choices.
Okay.
As for, so that's a faster computer. So that's going to improve your remote access speed, but really it comes down to network speed. And remember, since you're connecting to your home, what your real limiting factor here is the upload speed at your home internet. And the problem with most internet services, they mention that big number, 20 megabits down. And first of all, it's as fast as up to 20 megabits down, and then in a smaller print, 1 megabit up. And it's the upstream you care about because it's how fast the updated screen information is getting to you from your home. So the first thing I'd look at is just a faster internet access at home.
Yeah, and I'm somewhat remote, and I have as fast as I can get.
Yeah, you're on DSL probably.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's as good as I can get.
Yeah, well, that's going to be slow because higher-end remote solutions do is they, instead of sending the whole screen, they'll only send changes. They'll do a lot of tricks compressing the screen image. You can make it faster by using a lower-resolution screen image if you can. All of these things will give you a little bit faster. But yeah, probably if you have DSL in a remote area, your upstream is like 384 kilobits or 786 kilobits.
It's over that. It's like 2.8 or something.
Oh, that's not bad.
Yeah, it's not bad. And when I used to use...
2.8 upstream?
Yeah.
All right, so you're paying for a high-end, higher class.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not crazy remote, but it's...
okay, because that's pretty fast for DSL. That's good.
Yeah.
If you're literally getting that consistently, then you should be getting decent refresh rates on your screen when remote access. You might want to look at a free solution like VNC. You'll have to do port forwarding. Windows, of course, has remote desktop protocol. You'll have to configure your router in both cases to support it. The nice thing about log me in, go to my PC, they use something called NAT traversal. You're actually logging into a third-party site and then getting it. And that eliminates port forwarding, but it does slow things down. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, VNC will be faster. Up there in the clouds, it's a bird, it's a plane, it's Johnny Jet, travel guru. Has been everywhere. Last time we talked to you, I think you were in London.
Cambodia.
Then Cambodia, then you went to London.
Yes, I just came in from London. Actually, I was at the hotel. I was at a play next to the hotel you're staying at when you go next month.
Oh. You know, I want to go to a play. We're going.
This is right next door. This is right next door to your... You literally
what was
walk
the play?
100 feet.
What did you see?
Dirty Rotten Scoundrels.
Oh, I love that movie.
I think you'll love it. Yeah, I think you'll love it.
Is Steve Martin in the play too?
No, that's the one thing the play needs. The guy who plays Steve Martin is too young, but it's a funny play.
Steve's doing a new, you're going to go see it. I'm going to make sure you get tickets. He's doing a musical in LA next month with Edie Brickell. I'm very excited about it. I don't know anything about it, but Steve is a great writer. He people don't know. They know him as a wild and crazy guy, but his play, Picasso at the Lapin Agile, it's a wonderful play. He's a very good playwright and writer, so I can't wait to see. But apparently he's working on a musical.
Well,
in your area.
Offer.
But right now, Johnny is in the very exotic locale of Long Island Sound.
That's right.
Connecticut.
I'll show you out the window. You can see it from here.
Oh, it's beautiful. And it's thunderstorming or about to, huh?
It's about to. Part of it's sunny. The other part's not so sunny.
Well, he joins us every week to help us travel better. And I'm very excited about, I'm going to London too, as you mentioned, in a couple of weeks. I'm thinking about that. One thing I wrote to my buddies at Apple, and I said, you know, you're having this iTunes festival at the Roundhouse in London, North London, And I'm going to be there for the last day of the festival. Is there any chance you can get me in? They got me tickets to see. Lisa and I are going to go see Placido Domingo in the Roundhouse.
Wow.
I'm very excited. Last day of the iTunes Festival.
Good for you.
Yeah. So, and now I'm going to see Dirty Rotten Scoundrels.
I think that's a good option. But
actually, there's another play on the West End that I really want to see that's based on a great novel called The Mysterious Something of the Dog in the Night. And I really want to see that. But anyway.
I actually went to a play the other night in New York. Went to back-to-back plays, one in London and one in New York.
You're so
cultured.
And
I saw Aladdin.
Aladdin.
It's a great play.
Now, do they do a tribute in any way to Robin Williams? Because, of course, he created the character in the movie of the genie. It's brilliant, brilliant, brilliant.
Well, to be honest, I fell asleep the first 10 minutes because I was so jet lagged. But I woke up. I was Johnny jet lagged for like
Johnny a jet day. Lag.
But so they might have in that first 10 minutes, but I did not. So I cannot confirm or deny.
Do you have a jet lag cure?
I do. Well, obviously I don't because I was jet lagged.
I'm going
to What
need
I try
that.
To do is take a little 10-minute naps when you need it.
Short naps. And not long so naps.
Short
naps.
So especially if I land in Australia or Asia or Europe early in the morning and you don't sleep on the plane, which a lot of us don't.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want to go underneath the covers. You want to get out and get in the sunlight and you want to walk. But sometimes you just need to like sit down, and I'll even do it on a public bench and hold my belongings real tight and take a little nap.
That homeless guy, you thought? No, it was Johnny Jett.
Yeah, he's
got his belongings.
Especially when my room's not ready, which happens all the time.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? Even to you, huh?
Of course. I travel like everybody
don't you
else.
Say, don't you know who I am? I'm Johnny Jett.
No, because then they will never give me anything. they'll be even worse.
So, do you have a pick for us this week?
I do. I do have a travel website of the week, and I also actually wanted to talk about what's going on in the news with the knee defender. Everyone keeps talking about all these flights. There's been three flights, and someone just sent me a tweet, one of your listeners, about another one happened in Canada. I haven't had a chance to read it because it just came in.
So this is a little clamp. We talked about it when it came out. A little clamp. That goes on the tray table of the seat in front of you, and keeps them from reclining.
Right.
It just blocks.
I'm totally against them. It's not against the law, but it's usually against most airlines' policies. But this guy, you know, the flight attendant asked him to take it off. He supposedly took it off for a minute, and the woman in front of him slammed her seat back. He pushed her seat up, put the clamp on, and then she got up and threw Sprite on his face and his laptop. And then they diverted the plane to Chicago when it was going to Denver from New York. So the thing is, I don't even use this thing. Don't buy it. You know, the standard for me is if you're going to recline, I only recline if the person in front of me reclines. And then before I recline, I turn around and say, sorry, the guy in front of me reclines or the girl and I need to recline.
You shouldn't have to apologize for reclining. Why do you apologize?
Well, first of all, the airlines, they're cramping all the seats in.
Well, that's not our fault. We're all in this together.
I know. So we have to vote with our pocketbook and either not fly these airlines.
Or buy business class seats and fly flat.
But common courtesy is to turn around and to let the person behind you know.
I guess you're
because
right.
Because you know what? If they're working on their laptop, you could smash it.
Yeah. No, I've actually had that happen. If you're on the tray table with a laptop and the lid, it gets caught under the seat in front of
exactly.
you. And if they could actually snap the lid. I acted instantly, pulled the laptop free. But had I not been sitting there or not been paying attention, boom. So you're right. You shouldn't do it precipitously. So what I do is I push that button and I go a little bit and I wait. And if I don't hear any screams, I go a little bit more.
Well, I turn around and I usually let them know or make sure they're not – if they're sleeping, I just go back.
It's not like you're lying in their lap. It's 3 inches. These don't recline that much.
I know, but
–
the problem is Americans are getting bigger.
Yeah, and the seats are getting smaller.
In the last 20 years, Americans have gained 30 pounds, I heard.
Americans have gained 30 pounds in the last
– And that's what I heard. And the seats went from 18 and a half inches wide to 16 and a half.
Yeah.
Because the airlines are trying to make more money. And they've taken bathrooms out, closets out of the planes. So
don't go on those flights anymore. And can you go to like Seat Guru and learn which airlines have terrible accommodation?
Of course. And you know, Spirit Airlines, you can't recline, which a lot of people think that's better. Although their seat pitch is sometimes 28 inches. But
just accept the fact that you're going to be sitting upright with perfect posture for 5 hours.
Yeah.
Or more.
Well, let me give you a website so we had some kind of tech in there. So Poncho, have you heard of this one?
No.
P-O-N-C-H-O. So this one bills itself as the world's best personalized weather forecast.
Oh.
And right now it's only available in Connecticut, New York, Massachusetts, New Jersey, and your home state of Rhode Island.
Yeah.
But what I love about it is it asks you all kinds of questions when you first log on. So it says, you know, what time do you usually wake up? Do you have pets that need to go out? Do you have pollen allergies? Want to know the weather? Want to know how the day will affect your hair? So, you know, my wife would love it. And then they can either send you a text or an email or both. And actually, I put in the New York zip code and it asked me, do I want to know the alternate side parking information? Because in New York, you know, they change it. They also ask how you commute. Do you walk, bike, train, or drive when you leave for work? So I think it's pretty nifty. It's just, but it's definitely expanding because when I first logged on to this last month, it only had New York and Massachusetts and New Jersey.
You know, it's going to go great with these new phones and smartwatches where the watch will, you know, you could say, hey, good morning, and it'll say, good morning, your weather forecast. If Poncho has an app, it would just tell you all sorts of great stuff. I love that. Do they have an app or is it only a website?
You know what? Right, I'm sure they have an app. Let me just double check.
I don't see one, but I'm sure they will at some point.
I looked at my story that I wrote and I did not write about an app, so I'm getting worried there might not. But I don't know how there could not be an app.
Poncho.is. Poncho is. Poncho.is.
Is IS Israel? What is IS?
Yeah, no, Israel's IL. I don't, IS is, I don't know. Somebody in the chat room will tell me.
It's good. Yeah. I'm going to get out of chat
Poncho
room right now.
Poncho is. Johnny Jet is at johnnyjet.com. And he is out of here. Hey, thank you so much. We'll talk to you next week. Safe travels.
Johnnyjet.com. Thank you. Thanks for having
me on. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Poncho. So did you fly on Lufthansa to get here? How did you get here? United. This close together, right? Horrible. Horrible. Just like Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Johnny said, hey, don't forget, we've got great travel deals in our newsletter. I want to give him a plug. If you go to johnnyjet.com, because it is free, sign up for his travel deals newsletter. And you know, John works really hard. He is even on he's never on vacation. You think, oh, Johnny's in Cambodia. No, he's always getting up at 3 a.m, checking all the travel deals so he can give you good travel deals. He was just mentioning San Francisco to Palm Beach, Florida, $278 round trip, stuff like that. Just amazing. So if you subscribe, you'll get them all at johnnyjet.com. What does Johnny Jet do for vacation? He probably just stays home. That's what I would do. He's always on the road. Just stay home for a change. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Manny is coming down I-95, and he wants some help. Hi, Manny. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. Where on I-95 are you?
Well, I started the call when I was up at the border of Georgia and Florida. I think I'm about halfway through the state now.
Driving through Florida. Well, what can I, or Georgia, what can I do for you?
I'm moving from Rhode Island to the southern part of Florida, and the town we're going to be living in has horrible AT&T service. So I'm trying to find out what's the best way to kind of test drive a cell carrier, you know, for a couple of weeks. We have an iPhone 5, so
almost all of them will let you do that, especially if you already have the phone, and you say, "Look, I don't know how it's going to work in my home and at my work. I want to try it." And 2 weeks is very common, sometimes even more, where you can try it and then cancel and say, "You know what, it didn't work," and they'll go, "Okay, fine."
Okay, so they're just going to let me use a SIM card?
Yeah, just say, I already have the phone. I want to try the SIM card. Go into the company store and do it. And generally, they're pretty good about that because I understand that you don't really know what the coverage is going to be till you try it in your house.
Right.
And you know, I've had no trouble bringing a phone back saying, hey, it doesn't work in my house. They go, oh. Because that your guy has to. Now, another thing you can do is go to broadbandreports.com. This is a place where people rate their internet service provider, including their cell carrier. So you can see what people who live in that area use and are happy with.
Okay.
That's a nice site, broadbandreports.com. And that's, you know, free and And independent, because it's basically third-party reviews. It's user, real user reviews. And if you can okay. ask your neighbors, it's also a good idea because right. they know best. In fact, ask them what they do for internet, because they may have some solutions that you don't know about, things like wireless internet from a microwave site and things like that, that may be a better solution. Satellite is almost always a bad choice. Nowadays, 3G and particularly LTE has gotten good enough that it may be acceptable for you.
Well, I have a one of the AT&T microcells
yeah.
for my house, but the problem is as soon as I step outside, then I lose the right. the good connection. So,
but see, this is the opposite situation. You can use a microcell because you have great internet, lousy phone service. Where you're going, you need great phone service because you got lousy internet. You won't right. be using a microcell, I can guarantee you. So you really need to find something. I'll be honest okay. with you. I don't move without checking the internet service first. And if right. if there ain't great internet service, I ain't going. That's more important than hot water to me.
Right. I wanted to add a couple of things. When you go to London, you should try to get in a walking tour. I go there quite a bit, and they're pretty funny to.
I've heard some very good things, and when we've traveled in the past, we've used a website called toursbylocals.com. And it worked really well in Venice. We found a woman who is a wedding photographer living in Venice, works in Venice, and she knew all the great little secret spots she would take brides to and took us on a wonderful walking tour. And I hear there's some very fun, you know, the Harry Potter walking tour, lots of interesting right. walking tours in London. So thank you. Do you have a website that you use for that or?
No, the concierge at the hotels usually has a list of the ones, and they're all over the city, so it doesn't matter where you are. You can pick one up at any time.
I will do that. That sounds like fun. Somebody said you should go on the Jack the Ripper tour.
I haven't been on that one. I try to do the ones that are off the beaten path, and they're all the ones I've been on have been great.
What's your favorite?
There's a pub crawl that's pretty good.
Okay.
and then I did one, I just had some spare time one time, and it was just about some architecture about row homes that they how they converted them.
There's such history. The Muse, the old Muse home. Muses. Right. Yeah. There's such history. I'm really looking forward to it. I haven't been there in a long time, and can't wait. Well, thank you.
And one more thing. Off the air, you guys were talking about lobster, and you must have lost your accent because they pronounce it lobster.
Lobster. I worked very hard to lose that Providence accent, let me tell you. You don't have it either, Manny. What are you doing?
Yeah, I left when I was 18 and went to college, and they kind of made fun of me, so I changed.
Yeah, me too. I left when I was a kid. Hey, it's great to talk to you, Manny. Good luck on the relocation. It sounds like you're making a nice move. And yeah, every time I move, first question I ask the realtor, man, tell me what kind of internet you got there. Because if it doesn't have high-speed internet, obviously for the tech guy, it's not a good solution. Not a great idea. Pete in Brooklyn, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Pete.
Hi, Leo. Actually, for one of the previous callers, I was talking about LogMeIn.
Yeah.
I was using that as well, and then they started charging, but
They stopped doing the free thing, huh?
Yeah, they just buy the app for like I think it was $30, then they raised it to $120, and now they're charging I guess yearly. But SplashTop actually works with desktop to desktop.
SplashTop, all right.
And it's only $16 for the year, so it's pretty good.
Yeah, $10 a month is gonna that means you're using it kind of professionally, and I like the idea of hey, you only use it once in a while, it's free. That's good. SplashTop. Thank you. I appreciate the recommendation.
Leo, I also do have a question, though.
Yes.
What I've been I know you've been working with Scott and trying to do that hi-fi music with...
I'm very interested in what they call high-res music now. Yeah.
What I didn't want to try and get as expensive as you were going with it, but what I wanted to do is basically download FLAC music and convert it to Apple lossless, and
yes.
then like, buy an iPod Classic.
Yes.
And store all the music on there.
Just would remember that that the bit rate, the Mac can play up to 96 kilobits per second, 96 kilohertz per second, but the iPod cannot. So even though it's in Apple lossless, You'll be able to play it on your Mac, but you won't be able to play it back on the iPod. I don't know what the limit is on the iPod, but if you think about it, it doesn't have the bandwidth and the CPU power on this little device to play back these very rich media files. So the idea of high res is, when they record music, obviously in the studio they're recording, especially when they record digitally, they're recording it in a very rich form, typically 96,000 samples per second, and each sample is 24 bits. When they put it on a CD, they don't compress it, but they don't have all that data in there. It's a CD is 44,100 samples per second at 16 bits. So you can see something's lost. Now, there are a lot of people who say, well, whatever's lost, you can't hear. Jury's still out on that one. But if you're willing to pay around $18 a CD, an album, I shouldn't say CD because you download them, they're not on CD, you can get the original master tracks. And I think, why not? If it's something, I only do the albums I think are, the ones I've got to have. But you do need some special hardware to play back. When we come back, I'll talk about that. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk about computers and the internet, home theater, smartphones, digital photography, all that jazz. 888-ASK-LEO, that's the number, 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. Outside the U.S. or Canada, you can use Skype to reach us. Our website is techguylabs.com. We're talking with Pete in Brooklyn about... Are you on the highway, Pete?
I actually just got on the highway, Leo. Yeah.
All right. Well, put the phone down and just listen, okay?
can I ask one quick question?
Sure. Sure.
I subscribe to Beats Music, and they offer, I think, 300 is it kilobits per second.
Yes, but song? But that's compressed. That's MP3 or AAC.
That's what I figured. Yeah. So the FLAC would still be better.
Always going to be better. Yeah. Okay, we talked a little bit in the break, and maybe you heard it, but I'll talk a little bit more about this whole idea of better quality music. There's a kind of, there's the crazy audiophiles. We call them golden ears, who say you've got to have a record player, a vinyl analog recording. So the thing about vinyl is in its simplest essence, it's as if somebody, in fact, the first records were this, shouted into a microphone, and the microphone made a needle vibrate, and that needle recorded the vibrations in the wax. That's the original Edison record player. I had a little lamb, and it would just jiggle the sound vibrations, the movement of the air caused by the sound would move the needle in exactly precisely one to one that way, and that would be and playback. You'd play the needle back through the diaphragm, and it would move the air in exactly the same way back. Now, obviously, that's not how records have been recorded for years. They record them on magnetic tape. That's still analog. Magnetic tape is still an analog. It's not bits. They're trying to record the changes in the sound pressure. That's what sound is, the changes in the air pressure. And then they master it on a vinyl disc with some translation. But it's... Golden ear folks claim it's more accurate because it's exactly the sound kind of without ever being converted to bits. Now, in this modern computer age, I think we understand that converting something to bits has some real advantages. You can make infinite perfect copies, for one thing. The music industry doesn't like that too much. And those copies can be transmitted at the speed of light. The industry doesn't like that too much either. But it's great for us because it means I can download perfect quality recordings, put them on a computing device and play them back. And that's so much more convenient. Now, of course, in the earliest days of this, the internet was slow. People didn't have high-speed internet. So we compressed them. We made them smaller so they transmit faster. In fact, that was the great revolution that happened in the mid-90s of MP3. And MP3 technology is kind of interesting. The idea behind it is that your ear doesn't hear all the music. In fact, what happens, they noticed psychoacoustically, is when a particular note is played, there are harmonics of that note that become invisible, that just disappear. The ear doesn't hear them. So you could eliminate those, right, and save space. So the theory behind lossy, this is compression where we're taking data out, is you only take out data the ear wouldn't hear anyway. And you know what? It works pretty well. MP3 was succeeded by AAC. That's what Apple uses. But in both cases, they're highly compressed, as I mentioned, 10 to 1 or more. But the theory is if you've done it right, your ear can't tell the difference. Now, of course it can. It takes some training. It takes some attention to it. And many people say, you know, it's not even whether you notice it or not. There's a emotional quality that's in real music that's missing from this highly compressed music. And I'm not going to come down on either side on that one. I think that's possible. It sounds like voodoo, but I think it's actually possible. What if we could somehow make the music higher quality? Well, the first thing to do is not compress it. It's the difference between listening to a CD and an MP3. A CD is not compressed. An MP3 is a compressed, often, from the CD. And now, I've done A-B comparisons in very high-quality rooms. A friend who worked at Dolby Labs brought me into their sound testing chamber and did an A-B comparison of a compressed MP3 of Steely Dan compared to the uncompressed CD, and I couldn't tell the difference. And an A-B comparison, blind A-B comparison, is the best way to do this. Flip it back and forth. Which is better, A or B? Just like your optometrist, A or B. And you don't know which is which. Which is better? Can't tell. Sounds the same. But it was a fairly simple track. Didn't have a lot of complexity. A lot of dynamic range. But that track, I couldn't tell the difference between a high quality and I think there was 192 kilobit MP3. So it's a fairly high quality MP3. But I do believe you can tell the difference and that a CD is going to sound better. So FLAC, or Apple Lossless, is compressed, but in a fashion that doesn't lose any data. When you uncompress it, it's identical to the original. And in most cases, that original is CD quality. And as I mentioned, that's 44,100 times a second. They measure the sound and they assign it a number between 0 and 65,000. That's 16 bits. With 16 bits of data, you have effectively 65,000 different possible positions. 44,100 times a second, we assign a number to the sound wave between 0 and 65,000. That's pretty good. And most people will say, that's as good as you need to be. The Nyquist theorem and all these mathematical theorems and sound psychoacoustic theory says that's probably as good as it needs to be. That's why they chose that quality for CD. But that's not the quality most music is recorded in. Most music is recorded in a higher quality. Instead of 16 bits of resolution, they use 24 bits. That gives you a total of 4 million possible settings. Not 65,000, but 4 million. And they sample it more, and that can vary anywhere between 96,000 times a second and 192,000 times a second. Probably the biggest difference is the 16-bit to 24-bit, and many of the musicians that I've talked to don't bother with anything more than 24-bit, 96,000 samples a second. But that's a lot more information, maybe more than you need, maybe information that's not that the ear doesn't hear. In fact, likely that's the case. So there's two things that can make a difference in terms of how this musical information is stored and sent to you. Thanks to the higher bandwidth, bigger hard drives, we really don't need to compress as much as we do. We can do the 2-to-1 compression instead of the 10-to-1 compression, the FLAC or the lossless compression. So that's a big start, and I think that's going to probably make the biggest difference. Just uncompressed music, whether it's CD quality or higher. The jury's still out on whether the higher res, the master recordings, are going to make a big difference. There's also the issue of, can you play it back? So iPods can play back Apple lossless. That's a format Apple supports. It's a compressed but not lossy. It's a lossless compression. So no data is lost. When it's playing back, it's playing the CD quality. But it can only do, unfortunately, it can only do 48,000 samples a second by 24-bit. I say unfortunately, that's probably plenty good enough. It's certainly better than CD quality. But if you buy, if you go to HDTracks.com or one of the, or iTracks, one of these high resolution music stores, you're probably getting 96 or more bits per samples, 1,000 samples per second, 96 kilohertz. So you're going to have to downsample it for your iPod. You know what? That's going to be fine. Frankly, the biggest difference of all, I'm only talking now about storage and transmission of these music files. The biggest difference is how you're listening. And if you're listening on Apple earbuds, well, forget it. Doesn't matter. Use an MP3 or an AAC. Save space. If you spend a lot of money on headphones or a really good stereo system, you carefully tune it to the room, you might hear the difference. And if you're over 25, you might not hear the difference because our ears deteriorate with age. Unfortunately, the golden ears audiophiles are mostly older men who probably can't hear the difference anyway, but they think they can, and that's what matters. So I think nowadays buying uncompressed music, probably a good idea. The higher res, well, the jury's still out. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Spend your money on better headphones. You don't need to do Wave because FLAC or Apple Lossless is basically, it's like zipping a wave. So you will get roughly 2-to-1 compression without losing any of the wave data. So that does save space. It makes it take it half as much space. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, ask Leo. That's the phone number. So I guess I have to talk about these nudies. I don't want to. I don't think it's a happy subject at all. But I think there's a tech angle that is fairly important. We're talking about the very unfortunate, really disgusting release of private pictures from some major celebrities over the last week. And, you know, the good news is I think that the person who did it left enough fingerprints. I'm pretty convinced the FBI will be knocking at your door soon. Good. I hope they throw the book at you. But here's what we need to know, because, of course, the question now arises, well, are my photos safe on the cloud? And the good news is, well, Apple's made a couple of statements. Apple put out a press release on Monday, or I guess it was Tuesday, in which they said, okay, we've looked into it. We got on it right away. And as best we can tell, it was not a failure of our security in iCloud or Find My iPhone. It was a targeted attack. And this makes sense, that hackers were able to deduce, figure out, or guess the email address for these celebrities and then use that to do what we call a brute force attack on their accounts. Keep trying passwords till they were able to get through. We think, and there was a known flaw in Apple's Find My iPhone that has been fixed, was fixed on Monday, that allowed people just to keep, if you could guess my email address, you could go on a Mac, at your Mac at home, and try passwords against my email address unlimited. Normally, when you try to log in a few times to something, after a while, it slows you down or it says you've tried too many times. Let's take a break. Those are all to keep hackers from doing something called brute force attacking. And in this case, there was a flaw in Find My iPhone. So Apple is at fault here in this respect, if this was the technique used, that allowed hackers to keep trying passwords till they got in. And as you might imagine, I would guess it's the case that the celebrities affected are not geeks. They probably didn't use advanced security protocols. They probably didn't use strong passwords, and they likely didn't use obscure answers to the secret questions. This is another flaw, and secret questions should not be allowed. But many companies, including Apple, if you've forgotten your password, you can call Apple and you can guess or go online and get the answers to your, quote, secret questions. The problem with the secret questions is they're things like your mother's maiden name or the street you grew up on or your best friend in high school. And in many cases, especially for celebrities, this information's known. So if a celebrity used their mother's maiden name, that's a mistake because you can find that out. In fact, my suggestion, first of all, banks and high security facilities, iCloud, shouldn't allow secret questions. They only do it because they know people are going to forget their passwords and they need another way in. It's a bad way to do it. If you're going to use secret questions as an end user, don't give real answers. If they ask you what your high school team's mascot was, don't say the Cardinals. Make something up. Or better yet, do a completely random string that no one would ever guess, but you got to save it somewhere. Remember, we talked about password managers. This is a good use for a password manager. In my Apple account, not only do I have my Apple password, but I have in the notes the three secret questions and the three gobbledygook answers I provided. So should I need those, I can use them, but no one will ever guess them. You can't go to Wikipedia and find the answers. So that's flaw number one, and Apple did acknowledge that it was probably something around secret questions. But the more important thing is there isn't a flaw in iCloud that allows anybody to get in there, root around, and find anything they want. So we are not vulnerable unless you're being targeted by a hacker. It doesn't mean you shouldn't use good security, and that means a good, long, strong password. Strong means random. Not your kids' names, not your birth date, not your dog's name. Random mixtures of upper, lowercase characters, numbers, and punctuation marks if they allow it. Mix those up. And 20 characters is better than 8. What, you may say? I can't remember that. No, you don't need to, because you store that in your password manager. In fact, all password managers will generate good, strong, totally random passwords. Use those generators. It's really the best way to go. You should turn on second-factor authentication. Apple is at fault here. Their second-factor authentication is poorly implemented and, unfortunately, allows people to download their iCloud backups without authentication. And the evidence is that's where this data came from. Not the photo stream, but the iCloud backups of the victims. And even if they had second-factor authentication, it wouldn't have protected that. Apple is going to fix that, I'm sure. It's bad timing for Apple. They've got this big announcement, and they're going to try to tell you on Tuesday, you can store all your photos with us. That is one of the selling points of the new iOS 8. Upload all your photos for free. And I think it's going to be hard for the CEO of Apple, Tim Cook, to come on stage and say that with a straight face. Already he's given interviews to the Wall Street Journal saying, yeah, we're going to... What Tim Cook needs to do, and I think will do, is come on stage and say, we know there was a problem. We apologize. No, it wasn't a flaw in our system, but we can do more, and we are going to do more, and here's what we're going to do. We're going to make the system more secure. And here's what you should do, and that's where I come in. Use strong passwords. Use gobbledygook secret question answers. Use second-factor authentication, and do that across the board. Get a password manager. I recommended LastPass, but there are many of them. Dashlane, 1Password, RoboForm, all of them will work. KeePass is free. And use it religiously. Make strong passwords. Never duplicate passwords. That's another common problem. If somebody could hack your Twitter account, get your Twitter password, and you use that same password in 15 different places, they just got all your passwords at once. So never repeat. Never repeat. Given the information I've seen from people like Jonathan Jodarski, who is a very sophisticated white hat hacker, I believe the person who did this will be caught and will be going to jail. I fully believe that. But there are plenty of other people out there who are trying to get into people's systems. So it just behooves you, whether celebrity or not, it behooves you to use strong. It's not your fault. I'm not saying that. But we live in a bad world with some bad actors, and the best thing you can do if you're a good actor is to make sure you have a strong password. You use gobbledygook secret questions. I wish companies stopped using secret questions entirely, but as long as they do, use gobbledygook secret answers to your secret questions, and use a password manager so you make sure you don't duplicate passwords. If you do all that, you're safe. It's okay to store your photos in the cloud. I really believe, and I do. Christina Warren at Mashable, who's a good friend and a very talented tech reporter, was able to demonstrate how going out and buying a password hacking tool called the Elcom Soft Password Manager, for $200, she was able to hack her own iCloud account and download the backup. $200. It's a brute force password cracker. And she applied it to her own account, and she showed how we're all vulnerable. Apple has to fix that. They have to turn on second factor on the iCloud backups, and I think they will. 8888, ask Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We'll go back to the phones right after this. wouldn't be a bad idea if you don't need it. There's been no general leak of iCloud passwords. So you don't need to change your iCloud password if it's a good password and you're not using it anywhere else. If you're using it elsewhere, yeah, you should change it. If it's not a strong password, a long random string, you should change it. If you're going to do that, this is a good time to turn on to buy. LastPass is $1 a month. Actually, there's a free version, and if you want to use it on mobile, it's $1 a month. I recommend it. That's what I use. Set it up, start using it, and one by one, go through all of your accounts and change your passwords using generated, totally random passwords from LastPass, and let LastPass keep track of them. Then you only remember one password, LastPass. That's, and you can memorize that. Memorize, make it a good, strong password, but memorize that, and that's the only one you need. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We talk about this all the time, and if you listen to the show regularly, you certainly know what you need to do to protect yourself. It's not hard. I'm sorry. It is hard. It's inconvenient. It's not, you know, rocket science hard, but it's inconvenient. And unfortunately, we need to do that. I would love it if we didn't need to have passwords, if everybody were trustworthy, but they're not. And so we do. And the good news is it's fairly well understood how to do it and how to do it successfully. Sometimes people say, oh, I'm not going to use a password manager. That means if somebody hacks that, then they get everything. Well, okay, except that what's the alternative? Memorizing hundreds of passwords? I don't think so. Putting it in a text file on your desktop? No. A well-designed password manager, and this is why I do recommend LastPass, is pretty robust. For instance, LastPass doesn't know your passwords. There's no way somebody could get your LastPass database and figure out your passwords from it. They can't. Nor can LastPass, any employee at LastPass, do that. Only you can. I think that's pretty good. If you turn on second-factor authentication on LastPass, look, it's good enough that not only do I trust my passwords to it, but our company uses the enterprise version, and we extend an offer to everybody, all our employees, to have a free LastPass account because I want my employees to do the right thing. That's what I tell you to do. I want to back it up. So we've set it up that everybody can have their own LastPass account because we believe it's the safest thing. I believe it's the safest thing to do. It doesn't have to be LastPass. There are others, and many of them very good. Not all of them. Some of them have issues. The reason I recommend LastPass, they're not an advertiser. I get no money from them. In fact, I pay them money to use their service. The reason I recommend it is because we've looked into it, and my security guru, Steve Gibson, has looked into it, and we believe they are following best practices and protecting your data. That's important. 8888-ASK-LEO is the phone number. Sam is on the line from San Bernardino, our next caller. Hi, Sam.
How you doing, Leo?
Thanks for hanging on. I'm sorry I was so long-winded there.
No problem. I just had a question. I remember, I don't know how many weeks ago, you talked about not liking the hybrid drives for computers, but I actually put one in my PS4, and I'm wondering if you think there's something better for, like, gaming systems.
The idea, we all know that solid-state drives, the drives that use flash memory, like in your camera, are much, much faster than physically spinning drives. And the idea behind hybrid drives was that, well, why don't we combine them? See, part of the problem is because solid-state drives are more expensive per gigabyte, people tend to get smaller drives, and they run out of space. And, of course, the ideal would be, well, put the stuff that you need to read and write fast on the solid-state drive and the rest of it on a spinning drive. But there's no way you can do that on a PS4. And many people don't even want to do that on a computer because it's too much work. So the idea of hybrid drives is they'll put both in one enclosure, and smart software will figure out what to put on the fast drive, what to put on the slow drive. And you know what? It is better than a spinning drive.
Okay.
So I absolutely don't mean to say it's not – it's just not as good as an SSD. And for something like a PS4, I think that's probably a good choice.
Okay.
Because it'll watch how the PS4 is using the data and allocate it. So I think that's fine.
And I had one more question, though.
Sure.
You were talking about the password.
Yeah,
I was wondering if you know there's a free one that's as good. I didn't want to pay for one, but
yeah.
There's a free app.
Yeah. So first of all, LastPass is free unless you want to use it on your mobile device, and then it's $1 a month.
Well, that's not bad.
It's very cheap. And I like it a lot. There is a program that's less convenient, that's open source and totally free. And that, you know, the advantage of open source is you can look at it, or somebody who knows how to program can look at it and say, yeah, this is good. And it's called KeePass, K-E-E-P-A-S-S. If you Google that, you'll find it. That's absolutely free. It's just not, it doesn't, it's not as quite as convenient.
Well, $1 a month is not going to break me. So
it's worth. You pay once a year, you pay $12. I think it's worth it. And by the way, if you're just using it on your computer, you don't even need to do that.
Oh no, it's going to be on my mobile.
It's device. It's great on a mobile device because then I always have my passwords with me in a safe fashion. Right. You know, it's like carrying around a notebook with your passwords, but only you can read it.
Well, thank you very
much,
Bill.
All right. Hey, thanks for the call. Yeah, KeePass is good. It's just. Gosh, they've really done the work on LastPass to make it convenient, even on mobile. Jeff in Raleigh, North Carolina. Hi, Jeff. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Leo, how you doing, buddy?
I'm well.
I want to wish you safe travels first, and hope you have a great trip. So I'm a brand-new Mac user other than an iPhone and iPad, and I talked to you. I'm going to be getting a new MacBook Pro. And listen to the show every week. I know you talk about lots of things with encryption and so forth, and I want to know what basically the top 10 things that I should do the moment I open it up, take it out of the box. You know,
actually, that's a great question, because most MacBooks now come with solid-state drives. And the way a solid-state drive works means that if you didn't encrypt it from day one, some data could be unencrypted. It's a complicated explanation. I won't go into it. But if you want to have an encrypted hard drive, the best time to do that with a solid-state drive, and that would be on a phone, that would be on any computer with a solid-state drive, is to turn on encryption before you put any private data on it.
So, is there something I need to install? Or
no, the beauty of the Macintosh, just like Windows. Windows has BitLocker. If you get Windows Pro, that's their built-in encryption. All Macintoshes come with a built-in encryption technology called File Vault. It's in the control panel. You just turn it on, and you forget it. You will never know it's running because it's fast and easy. But if somebody – and it's here's the only reason you do that. If you were to lose that laptop and a bad guy would get it, well, he could get that, take out the hard drive and bang on it until he got everything off of it. So having strong encryption means that even if you lose the laptop and somebody has – it's tough to protect something once somebody has physical access to it. So
anything else you recommend installing?
Yeah, I would turn on the firewall. This is particularly if you're going to use a laptop as you travel around. Apple's firewall will protect you against a lot of things, and it's a good thing to have turned on. Doesn't seem to really impact anything. Works just fine. Apple does a good job with that. If you want to go, this is a good time to get a password manager, as we were talking about. New computer is a great time. If you've had a password manager, the new computer is great. The first thing I install on any new computer is LastPass, because then as I install new software, log on to websites for the first time on the new computer, all of that stuff, it already knows all my passwords. It's great. So it really speeds up the install. If this is your first time, do it. The next time you'll be ahead of the game.
Leo, would you recommend at all, or would you be concerned at all with the Macs as far as quality? I know that PCs, you know, tend to be lesser quality, but you just hear things about the screen sometimes and different things like that, or is it
you
just...
No computer manufacturer is flawless, and Apple isn't. And in fact, really, I judge the computer two ways. First of all, the use of quality components, and you put a big check marks next to Apple on that. It's one of the reasons their computers cost, 50% more. But the other thing, and really the most important factor, is how do they respond if there is a problem? And Apple is easily the best PC manufacturer when it comes to after-sales support. I think most of the extra cost on the Macintosh goes not to the more expensive components, but to the cost of support. It's very expensive. And the way PC manufacturers have gotten prices down, companies like Dell. Dell used to have the best support, such great support. One of the ways they cut costs is by cutting support. So now they have very poor support unless you pay for it. In effect, you are paying for it with Apple. The Apple Store, it's a good idea to buy it in an Apple Store. You have one in Raleigh, I know, because then you'll have a connection there. They're very good. You have to make an appointment, but I think that's actually a good idea. That means when you get there, you're going to be seen right away. You make an appointment with a genius, and they are very capable and also very quick to replace something that's broken in most cases. Nobody's perfect. Apple's break, Mac's break. I bought a new Mac Pro, very expensive computer, stopped working. Just was very unreliable. Actually, didn't stop working. It was worse than that. It would work some of the time. And after a few calls to Apple, they replaced it. That's what I'm looking. That's what you're looking for, and I think Apple does a very good job of that. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I didn't address whether you need to buy AppleCare. I don't buy AppleCare. Because in general, I don't recommend third-party warranties. Apple's not third-party, but... Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Oh, you know what that means. Time for Mad Magazine's maddest writer, Dick DiBartolo. We call him the Giz Whiz because every week he joins us with a crazy gadget. Hello, Dickie D.
How are you, sir?
I am very well. Happy 100th Giz Fizz.
Giz Fizz, and you, sir, are going to be Chatroom Celebrity of the Week.
Oh, that's exciting.
I am very honored about that.
I have been known to lurk in the chat room.
Yes, you have. You are a lurker from way back.
All right. We'll do it on the podcast network right after the radio show at twit.tv.
Exactly. I saw them giving you lessons on how to use Skype. So I think
I can figure it out. I don't know. I feel good, but sometimes I'm overconfident on this tech okay. stuff. So what do you got for us?
I have a gadget you're going to love. It's not really a gadget, but it is something. When we used to do the Daily Gizwiz together, we used to moan and groan about devices that had bright LED lights that when you tried to sleep,
you should see my bedroom. It's like
yeah, it looks
Christmas
like an airplane.
Tree. Yes.
Like an airplane cockpit.
Yes.
Yeah. I bought a device from Monoprice to switch between HDMI inputs with a remote control. It could serve as a flashlight. It is so bright.
Wow.
So this is really neat. They're called light dims.
Light dims.
And they are sheets of little dots, and they make them in different colors so they match what you're going to cover. I use the black LED, the black light dims on my Monoprice device. And it knocked the light, not knocks, it knocks
wait, wait
the
Dick,
glow down.
This is just a sticker.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. But it's a see-through sticker a little bit, right?
It's a see-through sticker so that it will knock the light down by about 60%.
Ah.
They also make blackouts that if you want, you can just put it over and the light will not show through it. And I showed an LED flashlight through the black one. It does not show
wow.
through. No, I used to fold a tissue over the Monoprice thing. It looked terrible. And also it interfered with the remote control. In about 15 seconds, I knocked down all three LEDs so that
I need this.
Are bearable.
Yeah, because
they're cheap.
I charge my stuff in the bedroom because that's where I take off my watch. I take off my phone. I mean, it's the logical place to put it. I want to have it by the bed in case it rings. But those lights, oh, my goodness. So this will make it so you don't lose functionality.
Exactly.
In the TV ad, they show people putting Post-it notes over these. That's ugly. This is much more attractive.
Exactly. And they make them in sheets, too, if, like, you have an LED clock where you want to cover the entire clock face.
Yeah.
And right now, there are four varieties, and you can get the four varieties. I think it's
$13.99. This is hysterical. This is kind of the anti-gadget.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Lightdims.com.
Lightdims.com is where they are.
I think I'm going to have to get these. This is a good idea.
They work great. Yeah. They work great.
Yeah, they found
it. And you're right. You say, oh, they just peel off, but they're so convenient.
It's a good idea, frankly.
Yeah. And they come in all, you get more than 100 on a sheet of all different diameters.
So that's probably going to really cover my needs.
Yeah, exactly.
Dick's website, gizwiz.biz, has details on all the gadgets he mentions, not only on this show, but on his ABC, regular ABC News appearances, and of course, you can also go there to play the What the Heck Is It game. We have a winner.
We had 10 winners.
So this is a device you had bought, but you forgot what it was.
Yes, because it's so badly made. It's a stackable shoe rack.
Oh.
For people who have very little closet space, you can put one shoe over the other shoe. And in theory, increase the storage by 50%.
Double your shoe. But, and it keeps your shoes aerated because their air is flowing through them.
Exactly.
But you're saying it's kind of cheesy?
It's it's pretty badly made. But 10 people knew it. And but, you know, we like the funny ones. Alligator dentures, earmuffs for the Easter bunny.
That's good.
Sprint for a stork's beak.
I love it.
Yeah.
So here's the deal. This contest goes for a couple of months. Dick gives away 10 autographed copies of Mad Magazine for the right answer, 24 for the best wrong answers, the funniest wrong answers.
Yeah, exactly.
And we've got a new item now that's going to go through, what, the end of October? When is?
Yeah, it'll be September, October.
Yeah.
And you'll be playing for the December issue.
Gosh, I don't know what that is.
Good. Right. That's what I like to hear.
Yeah, that is a strange look. So go to gizwiz.biz if you want to play along. All the rules are there and everything. It's just a fun little game.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you, Dickie D.
Yes, sir, and I'll see you in a bit.
Well, I think we have time for one more call before we wrap this puppy up, and that's going to be Kevin in Asheville, North Carolina. Hi, Kevin.
Hi, Leo. It's a pleasure to speak with you, sir.
Great to talk to you. What's up?
I got two quick questions. One, I've got a relative who is trying to play Farmville 2, and she's having issues with her Facebook account. We've got her set with a...
She should thank her lucky stars, uninstall it, and never use it again. It's going to pull her in. It's so hard to quit. Oh, my goodness. What's happening to her Facebook account?
She'll reach a certain point in the game. It'll say, you need to log in with your Facebook account. She'll go to the screen, touch it to log in with Facebook, and it says, oh, you're logged in with another account.
Ah.
So we're trying to get point to just one account because right. She was going back and forth between her.
Is she Galaxy using Note it on?
IPad.
Okay, she's using it on an iPad and a Galaxy Note 3.
Yeah, we no longer have the iPad, so it's just the Note 3.
So it's probably the farm. She probably created an account on the iPad, and that's the one. That Facebook. So here's what you do. You have to go into Facebook.
Okay.
And you'll see there's in the settings, there's an apps section. This is a good thing to do for everybody. These are applications you've associated with your Facebook account. Delete the old one so you can start fresh. But more than that, you're going to want to, this is something everybody who uses Facebook should do. Look at all the applications you've used Facebook to log into and delete any that you don't remember, you don't use anymore. For security reasons, it'd be a good idea to get rid of those. So she needs to go into her Facebook account and look for Farmville, delete that. And then the next time she uses Farmville on her Galaxy, she'll need to log in and it'll say, associate this with your Facebook account, and she'll be able to start from scratch.
Sounds awesome. Thanks for your help. One quick thing.
Yes, sir.
You're the phone master. You know all the new phones coming out.
I never wanted to be the gadget guy, but I was always the computer guy. But you know what? This is the computer we use nowadays more than any other computer. This is your computer. So, yeah, I buy them all.
Now, okay, your opinion, Galaxy Note 3 or HTC One, the latest version?
I love the latest.
As far as cameras.
Okay, so, man, that's a tougher one. HTC's decided that you only need 4 megapixels, and I and the idea of being it does better in low light. It is not as good a camera as the Galaxy. You're saying the Note 3 or the Note 4?
I've got the Note 3.
The Note 3 camera is a very good 13-megapixel camera. I mean, it's an excellent camera. And, in fact, I think it does as well in low light. So, on pure camera, I think the Galaxy wins. However, there's some things that the HTC does, like depth of field, that are really cool. It's more a matter of taste than really of accuracy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on MacBreak Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.